The Third Men podcast is a fan-made, not-for-profit, just-for-fun celebration of Jack White and is in no way directly affiliated with Third Man Records or the man himself. For the definitive history of Jack White and his music, please consult your local Jack White. And for everyone else looking for a home, you found one here, in a place so seedy. Enjoy!
I just want to bang on the drum all day. I don't know why I rubbed my nipples when I was saying that. It's really weird. Why did I do that?
Welcome to the Third Men podcast.
I'm your co-host, Paul Kavinsky. And I don't want to work. I just want to bang on the drum all day.
I like to bang on the drums. I'm your other co-host, James Kavinsky.
Sick retort.
That's the one I'm trying to think of.
It's the way that you bong the
bongos. It's the way that you bang the
big bass drum. Oh, this is a really, really narrow reference.
It's a deep cut into McCartney MPL animations.
Oh, God. So this is our Jack White History Podcast. We talk about all things Jack White, except when we don't. Sorry about last episode. This is a... we're going to do a spotlight here on Jack White as a drummer, because Jack White has a very rich history with percussion, James, wouldn't you say?
I would say, and that's how he started out, and that's how he continues to live his life as a drummer in the Dead Weather.
Yes, indeedy. And before we get to that, you know, normally we do a stop breaking down segment where we get something wrong and we fix it. Or we do a I Think I Smell a Fact where we elaborate on a topic that we covered in a prior episode. This week we're going to do something a little different. We're going to do a little bit of an apology, and it's called Annoying as Hell in Fact.
We're sorry.
They're annoying as hell in fact.
Sorry. Sorry.
Keep my little shell intact.
All those same little things that you do are annoying. They're annoying as hell, in fact.
So, hey, new listeners, welcome to the show. Sorry we did a whole Smash Mouth episode last week. we thought it was really funny. As it turns
out... April Fool's!
Yay! As it turns out, doing an April Fool's joke not on April Fool's is a little weird. But hey, you know... what is this, the Ritz, you know?
Yeah, it's the Ritz. It's a audio hotel that you could stay in and yeah, live
anyway.
In for a little while. But yeah, well, truth be told, we have yet to see the reception to that episode currently because we're recording this the day before it comes out. So drum roll, please. So Paul, there's a 50-50 shot that people loved it, and they're clamoring for more. They got their Harwell hard-ons.
I think it's safe to say, James, that this is the Schrodinger's cat of podcast reactions. what we have right now. It could be anything at this point. It could be anything. It's, it is both positive and negative.
Schrodinger's mouth.
But anyway, we're going to go ahead and assume that some of you hated it. So sorry about that. We'll not do it again, maybe. Or maybe, maybe we will. We are the bad boys of podcasting.
That's exactly what we are, Paul.
And that's been...
You're annoying as hell, in fact. It kind of struck a little bell, in fact.
Yeah, I like to keep my little shell intact. So this week, we are going to be talking about Jack White as a drummer, how he started out, the different projects he's been associated with. We did some pretty cool research here. And James, I actually compiled a list of all of Jack White's drumming credits as a third man recording artist and beyond. So we'll go through those and we'll talk a little bit about those.
Awesome. You're beginning to drum up my support.
Yeah, I'm really basing this off of things you enjoy. You're being caught in my snare of fun. The symbolism is very heavy.
Oh, that was good. That was very good.
Am I getting under your skin?
You're really sticking it right
to me. But we're going to start out here, James, with how Jack White started out on drums. Start.
Out.
I think it's fair to say we learned a lot about Jack White through the movie It Might Get Loud. Would that be fair to say?
That would be fair to say, yeah. That was our first real dive into his backstory, us personally.
Us personally, right. I know a lot of people were, the candy cane children out there were very versed. However, we were not. And It Might Get Loud was an illuminating experience, I know, for me, because it came out right in that transition, sort of after the Raconteurs, but before the Dead Weather, and the White Stripes were still a thing. And so we hadn't seen Jack White as a drummer yet. So really, my first knowledge, I think, about Jack White as a drummer came from It Might Get Loud.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well. You know, it might seem sometimes that we're the most knowledgeable people out there on Jack White, but we were late to the game.
We were super late to the game. I mean, this will come up later in the show, because I found a fact here that I was like, whoa, why didn't I know that? You know, and it's just because this show, I think, has helped a lot.
Yeah.
Anyway, as detailed in It Might Get Loud, Jack initially wasn't very interested in the guitar at all. We talked a little bit about this during our Flat Duo Jets episode, but he was more interested in the drums. His quote from the movie was that everybody played guitar. So the drums were the thing that initially attracted him.
Jack, what was your style? How did you start to sing? Like, what came first for you, playing music, writing songs, singing?
Playing the drums came first for me, and then I needed something to play the drums to. You know, I had a little four-track reel-to-reel in my bedroom, and, you know, so I started to teach myself how to play guitar so I could play along with something. Me and another friend I went to high school with, his name's Dominic Suchita, and we had he liked music, you know, rock and roll and all that too. So we started learning things together, and he was playing bass and stuff. So we started doing these little recordings and covering Bob Dylan songs on record and whatever, you know, I don't know, whatever we were doing. And so it kind of built up from there. And then I started to get into this band, the Flat Duo Jets, when I was a teenager. And I worked at this upholstery shop. I was apprenticed for this man named Brian Muldoon. And after we were done at work, he played drums, you know, so after we were done for the day, we would set up the drums and the guitar, and we would play songs. And we were really into this two-piece band called the Flat Duo Jets, who were doing lots of kind of rockabilly and punk sort of music, but also throwing in these really gorgeous ballads, you know, from the 40s, you know, things that Patti Page and people had sung. And so I started to get more and more exposed to those kind of chord changes, I think.
Jack White White had two drum kits to start. He had them set up in his bedroom, a guitar amp and a reel-to-reel also in there. As we talked about, with no bed, he slept on a piece of foam on an angle by the door. There was a lot of ingenuity going on there. You know, it seems like he was, even from a very early age, you know, he was interested in making things and sort of being off the beaten path with stuff. And so it's kind of an example. Not many kids would take out a bed in their room and just sort of replace it with drum kits and a guitar amp, you know?
Yeah, he was exemplifying the little room philosophy even then.
Exactly, yeah. So some of the stuff from that era he still uses to this day, in fact.
Really?
There's a Pisces signature Fast Crash 16 cymbal, which he talks about being his favorite cymbal, and was one that he had saved up his money to buy and got from a store called Wonderland Music in Dearborn, Michigan when he was a kid.
This is my favorite cymbal of all time. The Pisces signature Fast Crash 16. I saved up all my money when I was a teenager for this and rode my bike to Wonderland Music in Dearborn and bought this cymbal. Still my favorite cymbal.
And he still uses that. That's on his Dead Weather kit.
I did not know that. That's awesome.
Yeah. So I normally don't do this, but I borrowed a little bit from that unauthorized biography here when I was doing some research. You know, obviously Jack has disavowed that Empire of the Blues or whatever unauthorized biography, but I found some cool stuff in it, and it seemed decently researched.
Yeah, I find if I ever pull from it, I double check the research, or if I see a name that he pulled it from an interview or something, I look up the actual interview that guy pulled it from. So,
well, full disclosure, James is way more thorough than I, so take this with a grain of salt. But in that unauthorized biography, I'm just going to read a couple segments here from it. Gold Dollar founder Neil Yee's earliest memories of Jack consisted of him coming in and playing drums at the Gold Dollar at open mic night. And apparently he was, quote, really good.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good quote. It's a good pull quote. They really got the copy team in on that one. They're like, what can you sum it up in two words? Go, really? Good. Exactly. Good.
Nailed it, Yee. Well done. But, you know, it sounds like he was somewhat of a prodigy on the instrument. He had already learned to play with his brothers on a drum kit found in the attic when he was about 5 in most tellings, 11 in some. So it's unclear of when he actually came into his first drum kit, but evidently he found one in the attic.
Yeah, his family was musical for sure. All of his brothers and sisters played in bands, so makes sense that there would be a drum kit in the attic. It wasn't like some ghost placed it there.
He was walking with it, though.
But he didn't Robert Johnson it. He didn't sell his soul to the devil at age 5 and find a drum kit magically in the corner.
His early drumming idols included jazz extrovert Gene Krupa, who we know our dad is a big fan of. Hero of Jack's father's. So look, we've got something in common. Apparently Jack also looked up to Stuart Copeland for the Police. From Deep Purple. So we're going to fast forward a little bit here, and we're going to hit a little thing we like to call the Goober and the Peas era, James.
I would love to hit that era up, Paul.
So I think it's safe to say we're going to try and do more with this group, because I would love to know even more about Goober and the Peas, but I'm going to keep it sort of mostly limited to Jack's involvement as a drummer. I will say I reached out to their former, what I think is to be their former management, and have not heard back. So hopefully we will hear back from them in the semi-near future.
Awesome.
The band consisted of Goober, that is the alias of Dan John Miller, who eventually formed Two Star Tabernacle and Blanche?
Oh, Blanche, yeah, that's the one with Little Jack Lawrence.
I had no idea there was a connection between Goober and the Peas, Two Star Tabernacle, and Blanche.
Little Jack Lawrence, David Feeney, I feel like I've seen him around in other things. Lisa Jaber Janin, Tracy May Miller, and Dan John Miller. And occasionally Brian Patch Boyle on banjo and auto harp. Anyway.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So anyway, some familiar faces in there, but that was a really interesting thing for me. I didn't know Goober was involved like that. They all sort of had nicknames in the band, kind of like the Traveling Wilburys. There's Goober, there's Junior, who was portrayed by Tom Hendrickson Jr.
Mm.
Shorty, as portrayed by Jim Currie. I think it's Currie. C-U-R-R-I-E.
Sure.
There was Boss Hoss by the late Mike Miller, or Dan John's brother. And then there was Doc, who was portrayed originally by Damian Lang.
Hee-yah!
I'm just going to read a little bit of their bio, the band's bio, via their management at Detroit Municipal Recordings. Semi-country punk band Goober and the Peas from Detroit was known for blending odd humor and garage rock to the darker side of country music, as well as for the band's frenetic live shows. The Austin Chronicle called them, quote, some seriously sick individuals, and quite possibly the most exciting live act in America, end quote, after their performance at South by Southwest in 1993. I had no idea that festival even went back that
yeah, that's
far.
That's definitely way earlier than I assumed. And weird that Goober and the Peas played there.
I know, right? The band recorded a 5-song vinyl EP on Detroit's Fortune Records in 1989, then 2 acclaimed full-length albums, the first of which, quote, The Complete Works of Goober and the Peas, quote, from 1992, was recorded at the legendary Fort Apache Studios in Boston, who other people who recorded there, the Pixies, Dinosaur Jr., and Throwing Muses. I don't know who Throwing Muses is, but I like those other two. Their second album, The Jet Age Genius of Goober and the Peas, was recorded with David Feeney at the Temper Mill in Detroit.
Hmm.
The band toured extensively with bands such as Morphine and Uncle Tupelo, headlining the Transmusicales Festival in France, where they appeared on a French television show with Link Wray.
Oh, wow.
Link Wray, we know, and influenced both Jack White and Olivia Jean.
Yeah. A surf rock pioneer.
Labeled, quote, alt-country pioneers, end quote, by CMJ, the band opened for bands such as Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds,
nice.
The Red Hot Chili Peppers, Screamin' Jay Hawkins, and Bob Dylan.
Wow. A whole bunch of folk icons. Nick Cave, you will remember, we saw at Madison Square Garden.
There you go. I don't remember that too well, except I know you put it in the book you gave me.
Yeah.
And I've been playing occasionally since a long layoff ended with a 2009 sold-out reunion show at Detroit's St. Andrews Hall. Their band's, quote, interests are listed as the following on Facebook.
Great.
Putting things on layaway.
Fantastic.
Pride in one's hygiene. Swanson turkey dinners.
Of course.
Finding hope in the bottom of a bottle.
Okay.
Vacationing along the Detroit River. Sitting at the bar whining about cheating hearts. And warm bubble baths.
Wowzers. The turkey dinner thing is funny because I'm wondering if it's a call to David Swanson, the photographer and occasional Whirlwind Heat member. I believe he's in Whirlwind Heat.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, it's odd to me because Jack White did a shout out to Swanson Turkey Dinners. I think it was Swanson Turkey Dinners. It was something like that in the liner notes of White Blood Cells.
Really? Huh.
Frozen Swanson was thanked.
Interesting.
Again,
wow.
I don't know if it's a call to David Swanson or to these turkey dinners, but
yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously it's more than likely a call to somebody else, James.
Are you talking about famed turkey entrepreneur Carl Butterball of the Butterball Turkey Empire? No, we don't put out Swanson turkey dinners. We only put out the finest Butterball turkey dinners.
I wasn't sure you were going to follow up put out with anything, so I'm happy that happened.
We take our turkeys and we flash freeze them, feathers and all. And we make sure that they lined up in your frozen food section as whole live turkeys.
The heads and all, huh? You really got the feet on there and stuff?
The feet are some of the juiciest parts of the turkey.
I feel like that's not true, Carl. Carl, I think you're a liar.
I am the turkey magnate here, bro. Butterball.
Ah, why is it taking us so long to get there?
I don't know. Anyway,
thank you, Carl.
So that'll be for our next annoying as hell. In fact, is I'm sorry I brought Carl Butterball back.
Anyway, so let's get to Jack's involvement in the band. Toward the end of the band's original run, Jack White was brought on as a drummer. This was in the period before White started the Stripes, and he performed under his birth name of John Gillis. His P nickname was Doc, so he settled into that Doc role. He played on their final album and his first album release, The Jet Age of Genius, which was released on January 24th, 1995.
Probably deciding right now how to leave. That's okay. I don't mind. I think everything is fine. Oh no, is that the phone? Another phone call for me. That's a seventh call. I've had this year.
This kind of ties back to our discussion in the Flat Duo Jets episode where we talked about, hey, when did he see the Duo Jets? And we said it's probably the 94, 96. Well, if we know he was still playing drums in 95, then odds are it was probably 96 when he saw the Duo Jets.
Yeah.
So this is, again, via the unauthorized biography. Jack joined the band at age 19 in 1994. By that time, the band had been playing for 5 years or so and had already released an album. Their biggest claim to fame was supporting Bob Dylan at the Fox Theater in 1992. He goes on to quote Miller, "We knew we'd be touring a lot, so we wanted someone whose personality we liked too. Jack was a lot younger than we were. He wasn't the most technical drummer, thankfully. I do remember the first show when he played drums. For an encore, he came up and sang some Elvis song. People were shocked by his passion for it." This is via Troy Gregory. "Nice kid. He was kind of quiet. He came to the studio with them just to hang out one day and brought his pet rat. Kind of weird."
Of course he did.
Yeah.
I knew he had one at one point. But yeah, it's a real weird thing to bring into a studio, Jack.
"His drumming is unobtrusively skillful. Nothing like his guitar. It was the last time he would blend in with a band." This is that biographer talking. "Even then, he chafed at its democracy. Quote, he'd want to change songs night to night, even as the drummer," Miller recalled.
Wow. I mean, he's already got frontman in mind, I guess.
Yeah, at 19, he's already telling this other band who had put records out not only what to do, but to warp to his like ways of, no, we shouldn't have set lists. Don't do that.
I mean, good for him. He's got some ideas, and he's not afraid to tell people.
Yes, yes, indeed. Goober and the Peas dissolved shortly after that in 1996, though has since played sporadic shows here and there. Not long after that, in September of 96, John Gillis became Jack White when he married Meg on September 21st. So Goober and the Peas goes away, Jack marries Meg, the seeds are planted, because later, we know later in 1997 is when the White Stripes would get together. Mm. So it all happened in rapid succession. And he's still a very young man at this point. So we're going to fast forward a little bit, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Dead Weather. James, you really covered most of this Dead Weather stuff. If people want to listen to our episode where we did the Whorehound album analysis and review, you really kind of covered how that came to be.
Yeah, he had a couple of mishaps on stage combined with bronchitis, which allowed him to put his opening act's singer, Alison Mossart of the Kills, on stage with the Raconteurs, and he would take a backseat. He liked how she sang, so they formed a band, and he still had bronchitis when they decided to record their first single, and so he decided to sit and play the drums because he had a slip disc, so he could actually sit, right. And he had the bronchitis, so he didn't have to sing. So basically, it was kind of happenstance that he was back there, although he would later say that he, you know, kind of prefers it back there anyway.
Right, right. And I mean, to add to the happenstance, he had just so happened to build this drum kit because he was planning on doing shows with Alicia Keys to support Another Way to Die. So he had already built this kit and I guess was looking for something to go do with it. So all of these things culminated in the Dead Weather's formation. Drum kit was low, mm-hmm. and it let him press and lead from the back.
Yes.
So he could still lead the band, but do so from the drummer's seat. And his initial, and this is via that unauthorized biography, but his initial instinct for the Dead Weather's touring was for drum solos to replace guitar solos, which he stuck to a bit at the beginning, but by the time Sea of Cowards tour rolled around, he had really settled down on, and guitar started popping back in there.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that was the natural evolution of the band because, you know, it wasn't a Jack White band at that point. And I think he knew right. that, and I think he was realized that, you know, let the other band members kind of shine.
Yes,
it was. Absolutely. It's more of an Alison Mossart band, I'd argue, than a Jack White band.
I agree completely. Although it's funny when you listen to the Kills music and you listen to Dead Weather music, boy, do you hear what Jack is not only adding to it, but altering about how she approaches a song.
Agreed.
Which we'll get to because I'm about to talk about the time I saw the Kills later in the show. This project, I think it's fair to say, is the one that made the majority of fans aware of his drumming ability, and those not versed in Jack lore got schooled pretty quickly about his skills behind the kit.
Mm-hmm.
And he's great back there. He's really good. We're going to play some selections of some of our favorite Dead Weather like drum fills and stuff here. So as you can hear, a versatile drummer.
Right.
And again, this isn't a Dead Weather show, but they do play a role in it. So that's why I wanted to sort of mention that. Like, hey, like that is a big part of his drumming sort of history, mm-hmm. is the Dead Weather.
And his Dead Weather drumming style. Well, his drumming style in general is very uniquely his, too. You could tell whether it's him or later in his solo act, you know, whether it's Daru or whether it's him.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's hard to tell, actually. And I found myself sometimes thinking it wasn't him. I think he and Daru share some similarities, but I guess it would be fair to say his drumming, it's almost like a tight sloppiness. I know that's a contradiction, but like there's a funk about it that is also abrupt. A lot like, you know, sometimes his guitar's solos can be described as like orgasmic or like sneezes or like something, you know, like this weird sort of howl, but with a screeching halt to it. He kind of plays drums the same way.
Mm.
But that's great, Jace, because we're actually going to talk a little bit about Jack's drumming technique.
Oh, great.
The most we got from Jack in terms of learning about his technique as a drummer was from a 2015 instructional video, which he stars in to promote the release of the Dead Weather's third album, Dodge and Burn.
Mm-hmm. Which we've played clips of many a time on this show, if you're a listener.
We have hitting the boom booms, making the Skrilla. This was part of a series of videos the band released online as a way of touring the album without actually having to tour the album. It was kind of an interesting approach, which I would have appreciated a whole lot more if we had also had a tour. But what are you gonna do?
Yeah, I mean, he gives the reasons for that not being so because everybody was super busy with other projects and bands, and he was fatigued from his tour, so I'll give him a pass.
Yeah, I think he gets a pass there. The video is 10 minutes long, and Jack is funny as hell in it. He also directed it, and Olivia Jean is credited with hair and makeup. Josh Smith did the audio mixing. Some highlights from the video, we'll sort of play a few, but we'll also talk about it here. Hang You Up From the Heavens, he talks a little bit about that. The hi-hat opening and closing. He added an extra hi-hat to add a stylistic difference. He talks about like how when he was younger, he would have played it more simple, but he likes to add the little flares now to add a little bit more stylistic differentiation from his other, from like, say, the White Stripes or something like that.
Yeah, it makes the sound a little bigger too, you know, or more full, I should say.
Yeah, so Hang You From the Heavens, this beat started off with a hi-hat opening and closing thing, and but it sort of has an extra hi-hat hit in there, so it's... I think when I was younger, I might have just gone... It's the... Makes it. Well, we're gonna try something with this track where it ends up in the same spot as that beat, so instead of...
There's some noodling going on in there, but it makes sense with the theory of him trying to use drum solos as guitar solos because his drumming is very, it has a lot of fills. There's a lot of extra stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, if the bass is doing something simple, the drums go along with that. He constructed his kit with the Dead Weather play, as we talked about with Alicia Keys, and he designed the kit alongside Ludwig, who built it for him. Ludwig is a famous drum manufacturer. They very famously did Ringo's kits and the Beatles and stuff. So ring the Beatle bell.
I'd like to be.
It's got a 16-inch wide snare drum. Most are 14 inches wide. There's a 16-inch floor tom, a 16-inch wide rack tom, and he added a high-pitched marching band style drum to do a little, like, sort of like
some little flares
soloing on.
Since this is such a low snare, over here I made a marching band drum, really high-pitched.
Yeah.
It's weird, too, because they're all flat. So unlike your traditional drum kit, everything's level.
It's cool. I actually did a little research on some drumming forums and of people who had seen this and wanted to comment on it. And most people said, like, yeah, it would save you a lot of time having to reach around and stuff, like reach up and down and whatnot. So it seemed to me that it made sense, but it also requires a lot of reaching to the sides, which you would normally get in a stacked manner.
Yeah, he looks less like the guy from Rush and more like a guy playing steel guitar, just, you know, going from thing to drum to drum.
And I like everything completely flat. All of these drums, I like them at the exact same level. So there's no rack, tom, you know, angled, blocking everything. It's nice and flat. Like Ringo used to have in the Beatles, they'd have a really tiny kit so that the crowd could see him. All the screaming girls could see Ringo. So I like that idea. And I like these really old-fashioned skinny stands instead of those giant monstrosities of metal they put around people's drum kits. These little skinny ones are so nice and just more elegant. And it lets the cymbals sort of become little statues.
There were three floor toms on the left, three drums on each side. Obviously, that's a Jack hallmark. Those are deeper. There's a 14-inch jazz floor tom. The ones on the left are deeper. And the kick drum is 26 inches wide. He wanted them to go 30 inches, but it was too big and loose for the studio and for live playing. The bass drum has Dracula's Three Brides on it, obviously three being a thing with him, but I don't know why Dracula, other than, I don't know, spooky weirdness for the dead weather.
Yeah, he also likes those classic Hollywood movies, you know, Third Man and Citizen Kane and all those. I'm sure he's a Boris Karloff fan and all that. So.
Yeah, and we have got Dracula's Three Brides up front here.
He has a 26-inch wide jazz cymbal, which has a huge gong-like sound. And he also has a splash cymbal from a 1930s trap kit. So that's that, like, ba-doom-tsh. That thing. But in the right place, he says it can be cool. So when he's like, when he's really hitting the toms and stuff, he can also hit a small cymbal in there that doesn't have a long decay. It has a very, very short, rapid decay.
Yeah. Which adds to that fullness, like I was saying before.
Right. This is via Rolling Stone talking about it. The clip closes with a full band performance of Hang You Up from the Heavens, featuring an alternate drum beat White previewed early in the video. We played some of that at the top of the show. Let's play a little bit of that right now.
Sure.
And James, you know, when you're playing the drums, there's many different things you can hit them with.
Well, you're right, Paul. And I mean, one of those things is, you know, people usually use sticks. People use assorted metal implements. These sticks could be made of metal. They can be made of wood.
Metal.
In some cases, they can be made of in older homes, they can be made of ivory, perhaps.
Oh, ivory. Yes, ivory is, what is that?
Ivory is a type of bone, Paul. It's a type
that's
of
bone. Yeah!
He's hitting a rag and bone.
Rag and bone.
Rag and bone.
That was our best yet. James, first of all, tell the people what Rag and Bone is.
Okay. For those of you who are unfamiliar, Rag and Bone is the segment of the show in which we do a terrible introduction to it. But Rag and Bone is when we find weird and strange or otherwise odd facts while we're researching. And we don't really have an explanation or a place for them in the Jack White universe or the show at large. So we put them in a little box that we like to call Rag and Bone, where we can put all of our weird little strange unusual trinkets and facts.
Yeah, and so this Rag and Bone comes courtesy of me trying to look up Jack White's other drumming appearances. So I started to see a lot of real weird credits when I was looking him up, and I was like, man, I don't think Jack White played with Rick Springfield.
Right, yeah, that makes sense.
But they were coming from, like, usually really reliable sources, like Discogs, and so I was like, what's happening here? So there's another Jack White.
Oh.
Who's a drummer.
Oh.
And this guy, first of all, stop what you're doing. Look up YouTube clips of this guy playing drums. He wears a bandana.
When you said that, Skype stopped what it was doing.
He wears a bandana. He always smiles at the camera.
Okay.
And he's adorable. And I love him very much.
Okay, I'm going to look him up. Jack White.
Just
drummer.
Rick Springfield.
For Rick Springfield. It auto-filled Jack White drummer for Rick Springfield. Hold on.
Yeah.
Oh, so look at like, this guy. Yeah. Oh, look at that smile.
He's so cute.
Oh, he wears little wristbands, really, and he's got a little mullet.
I know. Dude, this guy played on Jesse's Girl.
The Jesse's Girl?
Yes. Like, that. He didn't, like, actually play drums on the girl Jesse, but, like, the song Jesse's Girl. He's done a lot, and he's so often mistaken for Jack White, like, the Jack White.
Oh, he had a rough time getting that name. Like, I feel like Jack White, John Gillis had an uphill battle to get, like, more recognizable than Jack White, drummer for Rick Springfield. But I think Jack White, drummer for Rick Springfield, is kind of slacking on his game right now because I had no idea he existed.
Right. I mean, it would be as if, like, your name, it's like the 1900s or the 1890s, and your name is Albert Einstein, and you're, like, pretty good at physics.
I mean...
That's amazing. Just real quick, not to belabor this point, but he played with Rick Springfield a whole bunch. David Cassidy?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Eddie Money?
Tina Turner, apparently.
Dick Wagner, Player, Bill LeBounty, Gary Murick, Steve Hunter, who I know, Katie Sagal, and Redbone, and Vicky Watson. Holy crap, that's been a
rag-a-bone.
Look at all this.
All right. So lastly here, we're just going to go through Jack White's various drumming appearances throughout the years. Obviously, we talked about Goober and the Peas. We talked about Another Way to Die single, and we talked about his various Dead Weather material. So there's all of that, but this is the other stuff.
Okay.
The first one after that I could find was the Smoke Fairies single, Blue Series single, Gastown and Riversong.
Oh, nice.
Which we've talked about more on the show earlier. I love the Smoke Fairies. Their album's great. Their self-titled album's great. You should all go out and listen to them. But this story of how they met Jack is really interesting. This is via Clash Music. In life, you have to grab any opportunity that comes your way. Raucous duo Smoke Fairies, they are not very raucous, knew this when they happened to spot Jack White was drinking in the same Hoxton bar as they were. Still coasting from the release of their Frozen Heart EP earlier in the year, they sidled up to Jack White, and the pair left a CD together with a fresh whiskey for the Nashville-based musician. Impressed, Jack White invited Smoke Fairies to support the Dead Weather at their first ever London show. The guitarist even took the time to introduce the band on stage to fans and later spoke to the duo about a possible single, and that's when this came about. This is via Teen Vogue. Jessica and Cass' big break came in the summer of 2008 when a rumor spread that the White Stripes frontman Jack White was in town. The pair, armed with copies of their single, went straight to the bar where he was expected. Quote, "He actually showed up. We couldn't believe it," Cass says. Quote, "So we just cornered him, bought him a whiskey, and had the DJ play Living with Ghosts," which was on their album. Their EP.
That's something that I've always gone to places expecting people to show up, waited forever, they never show up. Like, I'm amazed that he would actually be showed up at a place he was expected.
Yeah, it was just a stroke of good luck. White liked what he heard. He contacted the girls about recording some tracks down in Nashville for his Third Man Records label, which they did this past fall. Quote, "One night we were in the studio after midnight, and Jack came in with his band, and they picked up instruments and started to play along," Calf says. "It was one of those truly brilliant moments." So that's kind of also what happened with Olivia Jean. Mm-hmm. as we talked about in episode, way back in episode 5, that's how Olivia met Jack, was handing him a mixtape, basically, or a CD.
Yeah, well, wasn't hers a little different in that he just found, like, it found its way into his hands, whereas these people gave the CD to Jack?
They actually encountered him. Oh, okay. I think Olivia Jean went through his people.
Right. Like Margot did, but was forgotten.
Right. The next one I found was Rachel Garnierez's My House of Peace from 2009, which I keep seeing in a dollar bin at Amoeba and keep not buying. Whoopsie doodle. Should probably buy that. Evidently, plays drums on it. Huh. After that, we have Karen Elson's The Ghost Who Walks LP from 2010. Mm-hmm. He plays drums on every track except Stolen Roses, The Birds They Circle, and The Last Laugh. Also, he plays on the Truth Is in the Dirt single B-side Season of the Witch, which mm-hmm. is a Donovan cover, which we've played on the show before. After that, he played on the Thornbills single Uncle Andre in 2010, the Becky and John single I'll Be There If You Ever Want in 2011, that's John C. Reilly. Mm-hmm. He played on Chris Thiele and Michael Dave's Man in the Middle single from 2011.
Oh, yeah.
So this is, all right, so I'm going to just call my own smell a fact here. You know what? But James, I think I smell a fact.
Oh?
I think I smell a fact.
The most astounding fact. The most astounding fact. The most astounding fact is the knowledge.
I think I blew out my mic there.
It's okay. And this fact's just for me. You know, this is just a little tidbit for me. So I bought this thing called the Ravon Buddy Holly Tribute Compilation back in 2011.
Okay.
Because Paul McCartney's on it. And so I bought the whole thing. So I was like, oh, yeah, so other bands I like on here. There's like She and Him was on it. CeeLo Green does a song. Modest Mouse. The Black Keys. Fiona Apple. Florence and the Machine. So I remembered this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, Karen Elson was on that.
Really?
And Jack White played drums on it. She did Crying, Waiting, Hoping.
Huh.
And I had this, and I knew the song. I knew the version, and I had no idea it was Karen Elson, and I had no idea Jack White was on it. And to my knowledge, this is the only time Jack White and Paul McCartney appear on an album together, even tangentially. Crying. It just goes to show you, like, I was into Jack White. I was pretty into Jack White then, but I was pretty ignorant to his history and personal life and all that stuff because it just never registered. Karen Elson just never, just flew right over my head. And I heard the damn song. So.
Wow.
Really, really weird.
Well, Paul, that's a really great fact you just smelled.
When I reflect on that fact.
Thank you, James.
Smelled great.
We got a couple more here. Karen Elson's Vicious B-side, the song In Trouble with the Lord, 2011. John and Tom, another John C. Reilly thing. Gonna Lay Down My Old Guitar from 2011. Mm-hmm. We have, he played drums on the Black Milk single Brain on the song Royal Mega, which I think I actually attributed to Daru on our Going Solo show. So Daru plays on the A-side, not the B-side. C6 Steve, the song Write Me a Few Lines from 2011. He plays drums on the Blunderbuss album on the song On and On and On.
Yes, that's the only song on that album that he plays drums on.
So that's kind of weird. Dwayne the Teenage Weirdo's Postcard from Hell in 2012. He plays drums on the Beck song I Just Started Hating Some People Today from 2012. Mm-hmm. He plays drums on the B-side of that Tempest Storm burlesque dancer interview.
Right.
And no drums on Lazaretto, but he is credited with percussion work on Alone in My Home and that Black Bat Licorice.
Yeah. Well, if we want to credit percussion work, we can credit some stuff in the Stripes, too. I mean...
True.
He's also been on those.
So, James, that's been our discussion of drumming here, and we're going to kick it to our third band for this week.
Let's kick it to our third man, Paul. We'd like to welcome this week our third man, Andrew Dan Marino the IV.
Hi, Andrew. Welcome. Welcome.
Welcome.
Hey, guys.
We really nailed it.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, we're good. Definitely all those names are in my name.
For those of you out there who are noticing a change in my voice between a few seconds ago and now, within recording bits, I got real sick real quick. So,
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah. Speaking of real sick, you may remember Andrew from our Smash Mouth episode, so sorry about that.
You're welcome. Sick. I'm gonna say you're welcome.
Nasty. Sick. We're gonna talk a little bit today. This is a segment of the show we call Fell in Love with the Show, and that highlights whenever James or I see a Jack White or Jack White adjacent act live. We talk about it here, and Andrew, you and I saw The Kills recently for a 15th anniversary show of theirs in Anaheim at the House of Blues.
Yeah, we hopped out of work and drove an hour down.
Yeah, it was about an hour.
Yeah, drove an hour down. We told our boss, we were like, we're out.
Yeah.
Got down there real fast.
We're both really sick.
Yeah.
We must leave.
We just got super sick at the exact same time. We have to go.
It's from all of those drinks you were sharing constantly for a long time.
so we got down to the show. It was great. It was a really nice venue.
Moss heart disease is the number one killer amongst Caucasian men ages 25 to 30. 31, sorry. And we went to go see The Kills, and it was a lovely show. It was my second time seeing them. And I guess my fourth time seeing Allison, for those of you who don't know, and I can't understand why you wouldn't if you're listening to this show, but Allison Mosshart, of course, known for her work with Jack in The Dead Weather, and she comes from a band that she does with her partner...
Jamie Hintz.
With her partner Jamie Hintz called The Kills, and they are a group that had opened for The Dead Weather a couple times, and one of which... Jack formed a bond with. We'll sort of get into their friendship at a later episode, but so this was The Kills, and they're still touring their Ash and Ice album. This is the second time I saw that tour. I saw it last year earlier, and it was also in conjunction with their 15th anniversary as a band. Now, Andrew, this is your first time seeing The Kills or Allison Mosshart. Do you have any impressions of the show?
Yeah, I mean, it was even... one of my first times really fully listening to them, too.
You popped your sour cherry. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Gross.
Yeah. It was really rad. I'd only known what to expect mostly from things you had told me in seeing them or seeing Allison at Dead Weather shows. So I kind of went in pretty cold and left going like, these dudes are rad.
Yeah.
They were super cool. She had just like a hard rock vibe, which was really cool to see. Her voice was super good live. And she had just great stage presence.
Yeah, she moves around a lot. She does a lot of kind of Robert Plant-esque, you know,
gyrations.
Kind of rock and roll. Yeah, gyrations. Yeah. She's bending backwards. But
the cool thing is like she could own that stage all night if she wanted to, but she really kind of... gives it up at times to Jamie to just do his thing too. And it's really nice sort of like duality between the two of them sharing that. They really kind of made at least me feel like, no, they're like a duo and they love playing together and they're just like best friends. It was really nice to see.
Oh,
they really loved each other. And I don't know if it's just the 15 years or if it's always been hunky-dory for them, but I definitely got that vibe. The group that opened for them is called Dream Wife, who I mistakenly, without thinking, tweeted about enraging my actual wife temporarily. So that's a thing that happened. But they're pretty good. You know, they're kind of they're this British punk trio. They had a nice sound. I actually went and bought their EP after the show, and it's much, much softer. They put on a really hard show when we saw them. It was a very soft sound on the EP itself.
Yeah, it seemed like they were trying to just match the Kills vibe. Because I checked out some of their stuff afterwards, and it was like, oh, they were just trying to play to what the Kills were going to do later on.
Shows that had similar opening bands that were trying to match the actual act, even though their normal sound is nothing like that.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes acts try and find like-sounding bands. In this case, I feel like their live set just might be kind of different approach. But they were good, you know. They're definitely worth a listen. We'll play a little of them here. Yeah, as you can hear, that's kind of it's got a little bit of surf rock on it. It's got a little bit of like late 70s punk on it. They were very 90s experience. They were all dressed in 90s style attire.
90s sportswear.
Yeah, 90s sportswear primarily. Fila was a big
Crystal Light Singers, that kind of
Yeah, it was a real sort of like Fanta commercial.
Okay, yeah, there was like chokers and like a red velvet dress with like a choker and a short haircut. Like they looked like they walked out of a 90s music video.
Yeah.
Lots of slap bracelets just all over their bodies.
This is not entirely a joke. It was like they walked out of the set of Buffy.
Sure. Yes, actually. Right. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, it was like, oh, I think I've seen this band on Buffy.
Right.
Playing at that like... club.
That one place, yeah.
Yeah, I forget the club name, and that's going to really bother me, but it's fine.
A lot of 90s hallmarks. They covered the Spice Girls briefly.
Yeah.
Pretty good show, and a couple was aggressively making out in front of Andrew for that, and during the Kills show, and Andrew was made very uncomfortable by that, so that was real weird.
Yeah, I gotta be honest. Look, if you're going to a show, I understand that you want to feel the moment, and you want to, like, roll deep. I get it. But, like, here's my thing. We're all really close together, and I'm not going to join you. As much as you potentially want someone to join you, I'm not going to, and I would prefer you go somewhere else. Or go to the wings. Like, I know you're paying attention to the show. They were super into the show. They were, like, really excited
jumping around.
But there were just times where I was like, what is happening?
There's something about Allison's music, I think, because as I've talked about to many people, the only time I ever made out with a complete stranger was at a Dead Weather show. So there's something about it, you know, and you know, being a three dudes sitting around talking about this, I feel just really comfortable going through it.
This is a safe space.
There is a sexual quality to Allison's music, which I think is undeniable, and we're not actually reading into that.
Yeah, I mean, I said earlier, I was somebody who had never seen The Kills before. I will echo the statement that there is definitely a sexuality to their presence on stage, both of them, yeah. Jamie and Allison.
Yeah, the male-female dichotomy, you know, it's all in there.
Yeah, right. It's a real heteronormative band.
Yeah. Yeah, though I've seen The Kills before without Paul at the Dead Weather show, I was with Paul, and I can assure you, no sexual tension. I was stoic and in charge.
Yes.
Nothing.
When did you see The Kills, James?
I saw The Kills in 2014. They were touring, even though their last album was in 2011 at that point, Blood Pressures. They were working on their next album, which was Ash and Ice, but they were just touring, so I guess they were just trying to keep in the mind's eye of most people. But I saw them in Philly at the TLA, and it was a great show. I saw it with Ariel. Lots of sexual tension, just lots of it. Just so... it was a good show. You could definitely tell the fans who were there because of Jack White, because I saw lots of Raconteurs shirts, lots of Dead Weather shirts.
There was a lot of Third Man shirts at ours too, and mine was one of them.
I was wearing my Vault shirt at mine, and this was the tour that Allison went blonde for, like, or at least around this time was when Allison went blonde. It was around that time, and so I was taken aback. I was like, oh my god, she's a blonde now. Like, oh my god.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
And then soon after, they would put out Dodge and Burn, which she was a blonde on that cover, which I think, Paul, you hadn't seen her until Dodge and Burn era, right?
We saw her on the Dead Weather's first tour in 2009 when she had the black hair. And then I saw her again in 2010 at the Ram's Head Live in Maryland with the Sea of Cowards tour. And then I didn't see her again until 2016 on the Ash and Ice tour the first time. So, yeah, it had been a while since I saw her.
Yeah, sorry. My brain was gone haywire because of the sickness.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah.
Long story short, they did a great show. They played mostly Ash and Ice stuff, although they did do a couple really early songs. They pointed out that they hadn't played in a very long time for the 15th anniversary commemoration, which I would have appreciated more had I been more versed in their catalog.
Yeah, if you had done the deep dive.
Because I know their stuff, but honestly, like I think James and I, you were talking about, I mean, I think Ash and Ice is probably their best effort, in my opinion. I think it's their strongest effort, in my opinion. So it was one of the things, actually, Andrew and I were talking about this on the way up or back to the show. I mean, that was really the album that sold me on it, and it's partially due to the Jack drought, just because there's no new Jack material, so I've been clinging to whatever is sort of left out there, and we're all fortunate that the Allison Mossart stuff is really good as well as being Jack adjacent.
I mean, I agree with you about Ash and Ice being their strongest effort. I really like Midnight Boom. I think that's my second favorite. Chaz Sour Cherry and a whole bunch of other songs on it that I really dig. So I tend to think some of their music can be very melodically or repetitive, I guess.
Yeah.
Not that it's a bad thing, but Ash and Ice definitely kind of breaks from that mold a little bit more. I think because of her outside influences.
I agree. And it's her songwriting game has gotten a lot tighter, too.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great tracks on that album. Heart of a Dog, Whirling Eye are two others that come to mind, aside from Doing It to Death, which is just so good. I just put on the video here. It's dope as hell. I love this thing.
One thing I really loved at the show, though, for sure, was... I forget what song they were playing, but it was a moment where Jamie laid down on the stage floor.
Yeah, it was a real slow song. They laid down together on the stage. That was a good moment.
Their backs were to us, too. Like, they were leaning against one of the monitors on stage and just playing, and it was... Like, Allison just put her head on his shoulder, I think, and it was just, like, an intimate moment, it seemed.
Yeah.
And it was just awesome. It was just such a cool kind of, like, thing.
Yeah, that was a great moment. Yeah. They just laid there together and played the rest of the song lying on their backs, staring up at the ceiling.
Yeah.
Was it The Last Goodbye by any chance? There's two really, like, sweet kind of slower songs that I can think of. that would at least fit with that. And The Last Goodbye is one, and Black Balloon would be another one. But I feel like Black Balloon isn't as touching.
Yeah, The Last Goodbye sounds right. But it was great. It was just a really nice moment. And also, Jamie played guitar by putting the mic stand, as in using it as a slide at one point, which was pretty cool.
He, like, didn't take out his actual, like, finger slide. He used the mic stand, and that was just bananas. That was, like, super cool. Because I had never seen anybody do that before or heard about anybody doing that. It sounds like something Tom Morello would do.
Yeah, or, like, I mean, or Jimmy Page or somebody like that. I think they take a lot of cues from the Zeppelins of the world.
Yeah, but that was cool to see. And then he just, like, threw the mic stand back and pulled out the slide.
Yeah.
And started using it, and then eventually just threw the slide somewhere, too. Like, he was just going crazy at that point.
He was going crazy.
So normally the Kills are a two-piece band, but when I saw them, they had a backing band. Did they have that for you, too?
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a guy on drums, and there was a guy on, like...
Like a
synth.
DJ.
Yeah, or DJ, because he was queuing up stuff, but it could also have been synthesizers, because obviously they have a lot of sort of intricate beats, like in...
He was also playing bass, I think, or something.
A multi-instrumentalist.
Yeah, like he was... He was a multifaceted individual.
Yeah. He's fully functional.
Yeah, he walked out at the beginning of the show, was like, here's my resume.
Yeah.
I want to tell you that I'm a team player, that I will not take center stage at any point, but I will continually back up everyone.
Right. My worst quality is that I work too hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my best quality is that...
My best quality is that I work too hard.
They also had a big drum out for Allison to play on, and a small keyboard for her to play on as well. So she was playing several different instruments during the show, which was really cool. Yeah, you know, it was my second time seeing. I was about the same distance away both times, and it was just a really great experience. And just to talk very briefly about the venue, the House of Blues in Anaheim was great. It was a nice big venue. It reminded me a lot of Terminal 5.
Mm-hmm.
In New York, James, I mean, you remember Terminal 5.
Oh, yeah. We saw...
Kind of a wide open space.
We saw like Wolf three Mother. Or four shows there, yeah.
Yeah, Jack Stuff. We saw new Number 2, Wolf Mother.
Yeah. Did it have a balcony, like...
Yeah. Yeah, it did. It did. It's kind of what reminded me of it, to be honest. And you could pay to get into, like, this VIP section, which was basically just sitting up there with a table, which is kind of pointless, because if you're at a Kill show, like, you kind of want to just rock and roll for a little while, you know? But yeah, it was a great show. I would definitely see them again, would recommend anybody else see them again, and it's the second time Andrew and I saw a Third Man related act. Andrew was there on our last Fell in Love with the Show segment, which is when I saw Margot Price at the Troubadour last year.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. What'd you think of her, Andrew?
I thought she was rad. Like, she was super cool. And I'm not a big country music guy, but she was super bluesy and just singing about like real shit, which was kind of nice. Yeah, I've been listening to her stuff since.
Nice.
Yeah. It's two bands that Paul has pretty handedly introduced me to, and I have enjoyed them.
Yeah.
The next one up is on Andrew's. We'll see another show. We did see the Bare Naked Ladies together last summer, and that was a magical experience.
That was a real dreamboat. I love the Bare Naked Ladies.
Nice.
Love them.
Yeah, they're great. Sadly, the only song I can think of is One Week. I apologize. Hey,
no, that's okay. We can talk about Fallen for the First Time. We can talk about the old apartment. I could rattle them all off for you, James, but, you know, that's not a Third Man adjacent thing, so I don't want to hijack your show.
Oh, we could find connections, I'm sure.
On that note, thank you, Andrew, for joining us. This has been great. And is there anything you want to plug while you're here? Anything you want to?
I feel like I did a pretty solid plug last time for Smash Mouth, and we just hit a pretty solid plug just now for Bare Naked Ladies. If you don't listen to them, you guys are crazy. They're fun Canadians.
Well, you listen to tons of good music.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Give some recommendations. We can talk about
some good stuff. I mean, obviously the new Gorillaz album that's coming out.
Oh, yeah.
Humans at the end of April. Humans is going to be pretty cool, I think. The four tracks they dropped were really good. I've been listening to them for like a week now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, what else? I think...
introduced me to Bad, Bad, Not Good, and Vince Staples, and Anderson Paak.
Yeah, Chance the Rapper. Little Childish Gambino in there. I got a real hip-hop spin,
Andrew's, I would say.
Good stuff.
I can show you guys some fun things.
Real sexual tension in this room. All
Thank you, Andrew, for joining us, and we'll get back to the show now.
All right. Thanks, Andrew.
See ya. James, this has been a lovely episode. Thank you for coming back, everybody, to the show, despite our nonsense last episode.
Yeah, I hope we put some, I hope we drum pun. It's a drum pun. I was going to make a drum.
I hope we drum punned. I hope we drummed up some support out there from
people. There we go. This show can't be beat.
I just want to say our Twitter and our Facebook have been really popping off lately. Just hundreds of new people. Really, really cool stuff. A lot of people talking to us on there. We're going to do an all Twitter edition of new shout outs. I'm just going to go through these here real quick. We have Tubby, who's at MOUWINHO_. So Mo Wino, I guess. So thank you, Tubby. We have Greg Hancock or at Gerg MH. Crash Laresh from the Flat Duo Jets.
Hey, thanks, Crash.
Has been talking to us. So that's pretty cool. Yeah. Thanks a lot,
I'm
Crash.
Sorry I, awesome. I put Bandicoot after your name at one point in the episode there. I meant no disrespect, and we love you.
And I'm also sorry the first new episode you listened to was very likely our Smash Mouth Spectacular. I'd also like to thank Kenneth W. Kinzer, Deborah King, and Darren Combs. You guys have been great, and it's just been really great meeting a whole bunch of new people on Twitter there.
And along with all those new people, we have our standards, people who are with us day in, day out, who talk with us and post on the Facebook and on the Twitter. So we'd like to thank Jeremy Riles, keeping us on the rails, Jeremy Riles.
Callie Durga, thank you, Callie. You're great.
Yes, fact-checking all over the map. We have Adrian King, the punk rock queen, Adrian King.
We have Andre Lyman.
Yeah, thank you.
I don't think we ever came up with a good one there, but Andre Ice Cold Lyman. thank you to Eileen Corsano. Thank you very much. We see you there. And James, I think we have a very special guest.
Yeah, I heard from the North Pole the other day, and it...
Oh, yes. It's belligerent Santa!
Yes, we'd also like to thank David Poe, you son of a bitch!
Poe!
We went into a bidding war on the Third Man Records Collectors Group, and we both lost. Some may say that most people don't want me back, but you specifically requested that I come back. I'm going back to the North Pole now.
It was very good to see you, belligerent Santa. I would love for you not to be cruel to me this Christmas. That's what I want.
Thank you, David Poe. I'm sorry on his behalf. I'm also sorry that we went into a bidding war, but I really wanted that record.
A couple real quick new things. We're now available on a couple new podcatchers, acast.com/thirdmenpodcast. And we're also up on Spreaker. You could search the Third Men podcast on Spreaker and find us there. We put links up on the Facebook and stuff. But, you know, thanks to everybody who's recommending new podcatchers for us to be on. Those are really cool. Mm-hmm. So we got those going on. And then we also have our standards like Podomatic and iTunes, stuff like that.
Yeah. And if you want to chit-chat with us or tell us anything that we got wrong or smell a fact, you can find us all over the internet, the interwebs, the information superhighway through Facebook. You can go to facebook.com/thirdmen. You can find us on Twitter at thirdmencast. You can tumble down with us at thirdmenpodcast.tumblr.com. Or you can go directly to the source where we post our show notes and our episodes, thethirdmen.wordpress.com. Or even more to the source, us, at our Gmail, thirdmenpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes, and you can find us on YouTube as well. James does some visualizers there, which are awesome. We gotta mention, please rate, review, and subscribe to the show on iTunes. James, we have a contest running. You can find all the details on our Facebook page, but the long and short of it is, if you can rate and review us on iTunes and take a screenshot of that rating and review and email it to us, we'll put you in the running to win a free copy
no charge whatsoever of the Loretta Lynn Vault DVD. So some of you have done that already. Some of you reached out to us and we've been getting some emails there. So that's great. But yeah, please, we haven't hit the 20 yet. So once we hit 20 people, then we cap it. So get your review in there and we'll get that going for you. Hopefully you can win the Loretta Lynn DVD.
Yeah, a great prize, great DVD. And so please keep those reviews coming. We've been loving hearing from you guys.
And we'd like to thank Sam Kubert, Tom Valenti for our theme song, We're the Third Men. We'd also like to thank Susanna Roundtree for the intro and outro of our show. And we'd also like to thank our third man for this week, Andrew Marino. It was great having you on. It was great having you on last week, too. That was awesome.
Yes, thank you so much for your help with the Smash Mouth one and the real one.
Yeah, and James, that's going to do it for us for this week. And until next Wednesday, I will be looking for
be looking for a home.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
For more information or to contact the show, visit thethirdmen.wordpress.com or email at thirdmenpodcast@gmail.com. Also visit @thirdmencast on Twitter and search The Third Men on Facebook. See you next time.
Kids in their coitus, they're back.
Oh, can you hear it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got the sickness, Paul. I've got down with the sickness. No, different band.
Yeah.
Is that the very same? I don't know.
That is all right. That's a down with the sickness is.
Yeah,
that
okay.
One. Yeah.
I get it mixed up with Korn's
Yeah, definitely not Korn. Definitely not Korn. Maze, maybe.
Jack White went down to the crossroads and got himself a drum kit from Satan, who instructed him to play it to the wall. they're looking not as high as they could be. They're looking...
I mean, I hear you.
How about now?
Yeah, that was better. Say something.
Better?
I think.
Better. Bad.
I found I was looking up your Instagram the other day because I was going to tag you in something. And so I typed in Paul Kaminsky and some other Paul Kaminsky on Instagram popped up and he was an artist. And it was hilarious to me because he was also like a male model. And I'm like, nah, he's got an uphill battle to get out to you.
Okay.
You have been initiated, Andrew.
What the f*** was that?
We have to sync the audio, so...
Oh, yeah.
We have to do it at the same time.
I'm wondering if it's Katie Sagal, the actress. Because she was Peggy Bundy and Leela from Futurama. Musical musical career.
No way.
Yeah. She started her career in show business as a singer and songwriter.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Yeah, she recorded songs for the Son of Anarchy soundtrack.
Sons of Anarchy soundtrack.
Let's find...
Oh, I love this.
Yeah, her former spouse, Jack White, they divorced in 2000.
What?
Jack White, drummer for Rick Springfield, Jack White.
This just keeps getting better.
Gonna write my name in the clouds. I'm gonna free fall.
out into night.